That's for my crazy day. My packed commute. All those unread emails in my inbox. But I'm getting stronger, faster, and pushing myself further every day. I don't care if I'm not like everyone else. This punching bag is the best way to end my day.
Fearless is knowing yoga isn't your style. That's the power of the Blue Cross and Blue Shield Federal Employee Program. Learn more about our healthy benefits at fepblue.org/getmore.
No, I'm not for sale.
You are Locked On Colts, your daily Indianapolis Colts podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Welcome back to Locked On Colts, ladies and gentlemen. I'm your host, Matt Dainley. Thank you guys for joining me here on a Wednesday. And we got our friend George Bremer with us again tonight. What is going on, George?
You know what? It's kind of almost a sad time because today was the last open practice of OTAs. There's three more practices next week, and then I don't want to think about what comes after that.
Yeah, that's the real dead period. That's where people start scratching places they haven't scratched for a while, looking for something to talk about. And that is an absolutely brutal part of the season or the off season. And just, man, there's just nothing going on during that time. I mean, like even right now, OTAs, you know, we try to talk about it and we make a little bit more out of, you know, the smaller things that we try to gauge who's starting where. And that's what we do anyways. But I mean, that's just part of the love of the game. But once we get to where there's no practices, no nothing, it is just basically all waiting for training camp to come around. And it seems like that is the worst month and a half, 2 months ever.
Oh, it's awful. And you know that if you hear anything, it's going to be bad.
Yeah.
So while you're yep. sitting there bored, you're hoping you don't hear anything as well. So it's yeah. a tough stretch. But we'll get through it.
We will. We always do. I mean, it's just so brutal. You hit the nail on the head for that, for sure. So, what's anything new going on in OTAs that have caught your eye or anything? I did notice your tweet talking about Chester Rogers a little bit. He's a guy that I've been pretty high on as well. I'm anxious to kind of hear specifically a little bit more about what you've seen with him.
Yeah, Chester has been very consistent. I don't think that's surprising to anybody who watched him last year. Mm-hmm. But, you know, again, we get one open practice a week, so I can't really talk to what's happened the rest of the week. But the three practices that we've seen every single practice, he's been a guy who you notice. You know, today he had a nice catch in the end zone. He's just been consistent. He's been open a lot. It's what we've come to expect from Chester Rogers, but hopefully to another level. Again, I hate you mentioned at the top of the show, you hate to make mountains out of molehills this time of year. Mm-hmm. You know they're in shorts, and you know that there's a lot that changes. But this is a guy who's shown it, you know, when under live action, who has shown flashes of what he can do, and it's not where T.Y. was last year, where you were just kind of shaking your head because he was the best player on the field almost every practice.
Right.
But it's been a real solid, consistent effort. I can't think of many drops, if any. And I'm starting to think he's got maybe a little bit of Jack Doyle trait to him. That dependable, fundamentally sound guy. And every quarterback needs as many of those guys as he can get.
Mm-hmm. Almost like a Brandon, Stokely.
Mm-hmm.
Almost a little bit yep. of that to him for Peyton Manning. That was one of his better traits. You know, Stokely wasn't a guy that was, you know, especially in those years because he was later in his career, he wasn't quite as fast as he was previously. But he crisped up his routes, and man, Manning found him a ton. They didn't have a long time together, but Manning really found him quite a bit when he was there. So that would be cool to see him kind of turn into that guy for Andrew Luck. Now, on the flip side of that a little bit, what are you seeing much from Kamar Aiken? I'm kind of interested to see because, you know, we've spent some time speculating as to what he's actually going to bring to this team because he showed in 2015 that he was such a good ball player, and you know, when he had to step up for so many injuries and became virtually their number one receiver there in Baltimore, he was a guy that hadn't had even a quality season in the NFL before that, and he hasn't. And you know, last year was kind of a, you know, I don't even know what you really want to call it. It was just very much a down the depth chart type role, like a number four option almost for him. What are we seeing from him, if anything?
Not a whole ton of spectacular, you know, I can't think of a lot of highlight type of plays yet. But one thing that's really, really struck me, and it has nothing to do with what's on the field, Luck's been out there with everybody, and he's been working with all the receivers. But it seems like, in particular, he's around Kamar Aiken a lot. And so, you know, I think there's something possibly building between them, or at least they're taking that extra time, even though Andrew can't be out there, you know, getting the reps right now. He's taking the extra time, talking to Kamar on the side. And I mean, they're next to each other a whole lot. You know, anytime that Aiken's not in the formation on the field, he seems to be pretty much right next to Andrew Luck. So that's something that's interesting, and it'll be fun once Andrew finally gets on the field to see if that develops into a relationship, you know, with the football as well as whatever's brewing between them now.
Yeah, and I don't know that I would even consider that like a thing where, you know, I think that if some people hear that, I guess they're going to think, oh, he wants Aiken to be his guy, you know, or his number two guy or something. I would just relay that as it's more likely that he is spending more time with him verbally, because obviously he's not on the field luck-wise, and he's got a rapport with all the other guys already. He wants to talk to the guy he doesn't have one with.
Absolutely. I think that's absolutely what's going on there. And it, you know, it's interesting to see, because it's you often hear about the little details with Luck, but I think sometimes you don't necessarily see them in action. And that's one of those things where, you know, he's thinking ahead. He's thinking one, two, three steps ahead. And what could this mean? And how can I develop this kind of a situation? And it'll be interesting to see how that comes out. Now, you know, when I say that about Kamar Aiken, Dorsett's been kind of quiet. Most of the receivers have been quiet. And I think that's part of what makes Chester Rogers stand out, because he's a guy who we have noticed a lot. T.Y. Hilton is pretty much in the same place he was last year, which I think will make people feel pretty good, because last year was a pretty good place leading the NFL and in receiving yards and getting done some of the things that he was able to get done. So, you know, I think he's picking up pretty much where he left off. And one other guy that had a really good day 2 weeks ago that, you know, he's another guy that you saw flashes of at times last year in camp, Marcus Leak has been good. You know, I don't know that he's been as consistent as Rogers, but he had a very good day in the middle week of these OTAs. And just another thing that I don't know that you necessarily make much of it, but it's one of those things you kind of put in the mental Rolodex and want to check back in on, you know, as training camp and the preseason gets going.
Right. Yeah, that makes sense. And that's, you know, I think it was my last show that I kind of talked about, I talked about Doyle in a minute, but I'll kind of skip past that just to get to the point. Whereas I thought that the wide receivers for the Colts were a little underrated. They were ranked 23rd in Bleacher Report's league-wide ranking or whatever of their receiving core. And I think that includes tight ends, but that seemed really low to me. I think that they're very much undervalued. I think that there's so many little pieces of that, with Moncrief being injured and not really kind of hitting his peak yet. Dorsett, of course, not living up to the number, or, you know, not number one overall, but the first round billing necessarily that he is being forced to live up to. We're not just considering Philip Dorsett a piece and then looking at his skill set. We're considering him a first round, first pick for the Colts. And that's, I think people's views of him get skewed. Don't get me wrong, he needs to be a guy that steps up major this year and really proves his worth. I totally agree with that. But I think that all in all, when you take this wide receiver core as a group, I think it's a very well balanced and a very skilled wide receiver core all the way around.
Yeah, and I think that's, I mean, we talked about it a couple weeks ago on one of the shows we did. It's going to be, I think, one of the most fun and interesting groups to watch as this preseason wears on and as we get into training camp, because there is some depth there, and there are some spots. I mean, we know you hate to belabor the point, but competition's been the buzzword of this roster since Chris Ballard got here. And this position, this receiver position, is maybe one of the bigger spots where you get a sense of that. Mm-hmm. You know, you've got T.Y. Hilton's going to make the roster. We all feel pretty comfortable with that. Dante Moncrief's going to make this roster. You know, and probably Kamar Aiken, given the situation they put him in. But after that, you know, two, maybe three spots, depending on where Aiken's situation lands, are up for grabs. And yeah. So you do have guys like Marcus Leak and Tavon Smith who can maybe, you know, get their nose in there and compete with guys like Chester Rogers and Philip Dorsett. I think as we get into training camp, this is going to be one of the most fun position groups to follow.
Me too. Not only for their speed, but because there's a lot of height there too. Especially with a couple of these UDFAs that are in there. I mean, we don't know really what to see about them, but has any of those guys kind of stood out to you in the wide receiver core, whether it be Bug Howard or Griffey or anything? I know Griffey didn't practice today, but
yeah,
anybody down there do anything for you?
I don't think that Griffey practiced last week either. So, you know, he's had some kind of a tweak that he's dealing with. He was mostly on a bike today. I don't know that he's really flashed tremendously yet, but they really like what he did during rookie camp, and that will go a ways for him. Bug Howard looks like a tight end, and I think that's it's a really amazing thing. It's kind of funny because you look at him and he looks like a tight end, and then you look at Darryl Daniels and he looks like a wide receiver. So,
oh really?
You mean kind of are you looking to watch those two?
Are you talking body type or by the way they run routes
type.
And stuff? Okay.
Yeah, body. You know, just when you see them in warmups or, you know, when they're not out running routes, they look like they're swapped positions. And I think they've got Howard wearing 83, so it only adds to that illusion. But, you know, with a lot of the receivers, I think it's tough right now too, because you don't have Andrew Luck out there working with you. And so, you know, they're trying to do what they can. And it's not that, you know, Tolzien had a much better day this week than he did last week when we were out there. Morris and Walker have had their moments, but you know, none of those guys are Andrew Luck. And so you're not going to look as good as you potentially could when the number one guy's out there. So I think that's another reason why it'll be interesting as this unfolds to see, even if Luck isn't available in the preseason, just to see what they do in game situations. Cause I know you were at training camp last year with both Rodgers and Smith, there were moments and you were like, maybe there's something, but it really was the preseason games when you started to see them and really take notice. So, you know, it's always going to be fun to watch. And I think this receiving group all the way down through the undrafted guys, it's a group that bears that kind of attention.
Yeah. And like you said, with the difference of training camp and, you know, and Pagano's kind of been hitting on this almost every time, you know, we've seen him at the podium or reading the transcripts or anything like that. He really says the same thing every time. And in this case, it's not just coach speak. It really is the way it is. You really don't know anything until you see pads and actual competition being done. I mean, you can run routes and all that stuff with just coverage and all that. But until everything comes full circle to where you're actually having a practice, you know, even a physical practice, you really don't know what you got with any of these guys. And last year, Rodgers really, you know, emerged from that group. And it's exciting for me to watch him do this. He's been one of my favorites since last year's preseason. You know, and even right now, like we talk about Howard and Daniels and some of those guys. Those guys are fun to talk about right now, but we don't see them very often at all. And even no matter what your thoughts are on those guys going into preseason, you have to see them in preseason before you can really get any sort of, I think I really like this guy, or maybe he's not quite what we thought once it comes to fighting against NFL competition. And Rodgers, you know, his offseason, he was tweeting out some stuff about him with him working out and everything. He looks really good, really fast, and he's always been a good natural hands catcher. So that's always been appealing to me, and I think a lot of others as well. So I'm real excited for him. I think that he's going to be in a knockdown, dragout battle for that fourth and fifth spot on the depth chart for sure.
Absolutely. And the fact that the opportunity is there, I think you just see it with a lot of the guys. There's just an energy because everybody feels like there's opportunity, you know, at every position, pretty much. There's competition all over the place. One guy who has also flashed, and again, you know, going back to Pagano's caveat, but almost everybody on the defensive side has had something good to say about Jonathan Hankins. His impact is already being felt just in terms of his kind of outgoing, shall we say, personality. I think that that's affecting the defense a little bit. They haven't really had a guy like that maybe since Corey Redding was here that you know, that's willing to kind of fire up that side of the ball and to be a leader, be a vocal guy. He's not anywhere near where Corey Redding was yet, but you know, he's only been on the roster for a few months. You can start to see him though kind of emerging as a guy that they look to. A lot of the defensive players that have come to the podium and talked have brought him up on their own without even being asked. And then today, you know, Coach Pagano said, look, you know, we know we have to wait. We know we have to see Eli Bullets, but he's a good player. Mm-hmm. And, yeah, I think he's going to make a big difference on that defensive front.
Yeah, I agree. And, you know, I think that's the telltale sign. And some of this is probably just his makeup and his personality. But a lot of that is a guy coming in knowing that he's important, understanding the situation. He knows that he's important to this defense. And he also knows that he's got a little bit of talent around him and that he also needs to be the vocal guy. Whether he feels like there was other vocal leaders on this team or not, on the field, in the locker room or whatever, he knows he still has to be another one. I mean, the guy, you're in the center of the defense, whether that's you or a linebacker or a safety, you've got to be the guys telling the other people on either side of you where to get, where to line up. You've got to be the smartest guy on the field if you're in the middle, because you've got so many people to direct throughout the practice and the game and everything else. And Hankins adds a real sexiness to this defense, I think, with his attitude. And I think that, like you said, that's trickling downhill. Guys are thinking about him while they're talking about other things, and that's getting them in tune to and bringing him up with natural leadership. No, I mean, I don't know that anybody's saying he's a leader, but by mentioning his name and talking about what he's bringing to this team, he's already become a leader.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And you can just feel it. You know, it's just one of those things that the more days that we're out there, the more you hear his name, the more you start to go, okay, you know, there's something there. And I think that's going to be a big part of this defense, because we wondered, when you lose guys like DeQuell Jackson and Mike Adams, you know, who's going to step up? And Robert Mathis, of course, who's going to step up and who's going to be that voice in the locker room? And it may not be Jonathan Hankins, but at least in this very early stage, you start to see chances that, hey, there's a potential this could be one of those guys.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And you've talked, kind of switching gears here, you've talked about it, it seems like this is a large focus on this team this year. The linebackers getting a lot of questions in virtually every media session. A lot of talk about them because they have been so liberal with switching the guys around, I think, a little bit. People are excited to see what Morrison can bring. I think Spence has been another guy who people are looking up to, that they feel that there's a lot of potential with him in this lineup. And then you've got, like, the heavy hitter with Bostic and, you know, Edwin Jackson coming back. There's a lot of thought, I think, that there's some good experience from this linebacker core. There's a lot of pop from this linebacker core, and there's a lot of potential to get better in pass coverage.
Yeah, absolutely. This is a wide open race. Today was kind of John Bostic's day. I think he got more snaps out there than any other individual linebacker, and he got brought up by Chuck Pagano and praised by Pagano during the presser. So, you know, it really was kind of Bostic's day. But again, one of the bigger parts of his game is that physicality. You're just not going to see that yet. Mm-hmm. But he's running around well, and I think that's something they really wanted to see. Where's his health at? How's he doing? You know, his movement has been good, and that's a big plus for him. But that being said, you know, just as much as today was kind of his day, the first day we were out there, Antonio Morrison got the bulk of the snaps. Sean Spence has been out there quite a bit. Edwin Jackson has been out there quite a bit. Not so much this week, but in the first 2 weeks, we saw quite a bit of Luke Rhodes in the nickel package.
Yeah.
So, you know, even a guy like that's going to get involved in. Now Anthony Walker is here. and in the mix. And I think he's a guy a lot of people are intrigued by, a guy who did some things in the Big Ten that, you know, let's see what he can add to the mix. So he's back from school, and I think today was his fourth practice, and that's a position that it may very well go all the way down to the opener at LA before it's settled.
Right. And obviously this is totally, I mean, speculation to the highest degree, but I don't know, I have another way to ask it. The thought process with Walker right now, give me the feeling of it. I mean, I know he's only been there for a few practices, but the feeling of him, is there a, this guy's going to make the roster and compete on a daily basis feeling around him, in your opinion? Or is it more of this guy's kind of straddling the roster possibilities or what?
Yeah, you know, like you said, it's tough, especially with him only being here a very short period of time. But it feels like he's going to be, at the very least, a special teams guy. Mm-hmm. He's brought that up a lot, his willingness to play special teams and his ability to do that. So it feels like, if nothing else, he's going to be around for there. But, yeah, I think he's a guy that they really feel good about his mental part of the game. And he's another guy with some natural leadership that maybe hasn't yet fully bloomed. It did during rookie minicamp. He was a guy that was definitely a leader out there for him. But you haven't seen it yet with the veterans, because he hasn't really been out there very long with the veterans. Mm-hmm. But I think he's a guy that they have some pretty high hopes for. But again, until they start hitting, for the linebackers, it's such a tough spot. Them and the offensive linemen, there's not a whole lot that they can do this time of year to really separate themselves from one another.
Yeah, the main thing that those guys can do is get their footwork down and improve it. I mean, for going, you know, for, I mean, just the various things. If you think about a middle linebacker, whether they're a Will or a Mike, you're thinking about, okay, they're coming up to stop the run. That's one basic set of footwork. Then you've got where they need to drop into a zone coverage. That's also not in a reactionary, but then you've got the man-to-man coverage, and you've got the other coverages that come with that position. And those guys really have to get their footwork down before they get into the hitting. And that's something that's important going through. And it for this defense specifically, like we said, uh-huh. there's a lot of potential with these guys and a lot of thought going into this middle linebacker core. These guys have to be much better at covering running backs and tight ends going into this year's training camp, or this is still going to be a very suspect defense, despite the exciting growth possibilities from the defensive line or even the secondary for that matter.
And that's one thing that really got brought up today. You know, there is a real focus on that coverage aspect. It's something that Sean Spence has been decent at, especially last year in Tennessee. That's one of the areas that he really played well in. And it's something that today Pagano said he really feels like Bostic has been progressing in, and they've seen, you know, him get better in his time here, as short as it is in that area. But that, in all honesty, that's probably going to be what separates these guys in the end, is who they feel most comfortable with in that situation. Because you saw last year how often they got eaten alive underneath. Guys like Brian Hoyer and even Brock Osweiler ended mm-hmm. up looking like Pro Bowlers for at least parts of their game, because they had such easy completions coming in these mismatches with the linebackers. And I think that's something that as they go through training camp and as they get into the preseason, ultimately that's probably what's going to make the difference at these spots. Is, you know, obviously whoever is in there is going to have to stop the run. That goes without saying. But I think that coverage skill is going to be what ultimately determines who gets those starting spots.
Mm-hmm. And for the most part, with a lot of these inside linebackers that are already on the team, their natural motions are to stop the run anyways. Now, they haven't always been great at it, but that's a natural reaction mm-hmm. from the middle linebacker, as opposed to being in coverage and being in some diverse coverages as well. So obviously that's where you work. But there's a little bit of growing excitement. Now, the other day I talked to Zach Kiefer. He was talking about Terrell Basham a little bit, and about a guy that you just kind of watch him and you think, man, something could be really there, despite seeing him in shorts.
And,
yeah, I mean, the natural explosion that comes out of him and everything else. And you can still see his handwork and his technique that comes from that, from some of the simple drills that they do. How much, aside from his initial burst and stuff like that, what else are you seeing from him?
Yeah, you know, he's a guy that I think I cannot wait for those first few pass rush drills.
Right. I just,
you know, you love that first day in pads when you see the individual one-on-ones. I really can't wait to see what he's going to do in there. But yeah, he's a guy that looks the part. I don't know how else to say it. I know that's a terrible thing. because it doesn't always translate to anything, but he's one of those guys that if you were just walking in and you didn't know anybody and you didn't have any background on anybody, you would look at him and say, that guy's going to rush the quarterback. You know, it's just, he's got that kind of appeal to him, and it's part of his way he carries himself. But yeah, he's got that initial burst. There's been several times where he's been there and it would have been a sack, and they let the play go on. You know how that goes.
Mm-hmm.
But he's beaten his man more often than not when I've been able to watch him. And it's a really interesting thing to watch, because I think they're going to try to use him as a third down specialist mainly, you know, as a guy at least who mainly has his hand in the ground, not try to put a lot on his plate yet as far as the outside linebacker part of it. You know, let him do what he does best. And I think – if he gets in that situation, he could definitely, you know, from what we see now, it could definitely be a good thing.
Yeah, it's exciting to know that you have a guy that not only that you believe is a legit pass rusher, but the coaches believe that in OTAs, you know, this early, they believe that there's something special there. And obviously that's why you drafted the guy, because you needed it, and B, you know, you're hoping that you're hoping that that's not a guy you're constantly having to work on to have him impress his game. You know, that's somebody that you want to come in and that you can work with to perfect his game, but you want that guy to have some natural immediate impact ability.
And Basham, I think, is so important in all of this, because, you know, in talking with Coach Venturi a lot out there too, John Simon is going to be a good first and second down guy, but on third down, he's just okay. You know, he can get to the quarterback and he can give you some things in that role, but he's not special. You know, he's not unique. He's not a guy that can really be a game changer in that facet of the game.
Mm-hmm.
And so if you can get Basham to play as a third down specialist, it's going to allow Jabal Sheard to play on the other side and go against right tackles, which is a better matchup for him.
Mm-hmm.
It's one of those things that it's a small thing, but it makes a big difference for the defense.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Let's go back to the offense here and talk about the running backs here. Now the Colts got rid of Brandon Radcliffe and brought in Christine Michael. Obviously people are excited to see what Marlon Mack can do. Was there anything from this running back group that you saw that piqued your interest or anything like that today?
Yeah, you know, Mack's the same way as Basham in the sense that there's just an air about him. I don't know if there's anything in particular that he's done that you can point to and say, you know, wow, that was really great, because again, it's not really conducive to that kind of a thing for running back. They can catch some passes and they can do some of that, but you know, their running plays are basically walkthroughs. So, but it's just, he's fluid, you know, and you see the speed. You see the potential there. He's a guy, they don't have another guy like him on the roster. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
His speed and his breakaway ability is unique to this team. And he's a guy they need a lot from. So it's going to be interesting to see. The thing I like about what they've done with him is they brought in Michael. You know, Turbin was already here. They brought him back. There's enough veteran presence on the roster to make Mack earn his spot.
Right.
He's not going to be handed a role. And I think that's really good. I think it's going to, you know, it's going to push him to improve more quickly and to show that potential, you know, to reach that potential as quickly as possible. And to me, that's the best thing about it. You know, I think too many times in the past, you've seen guys kind of crowned before they've really done anything. And that's what the Michael move to me meant was, look, here's, everybody likes Marlon Mack, you know, so far, and they see good things. He's working on his pass protection. That's going to be probably the most important thing for him to work on.
Absolutely.
Because obviously didn't do a ton of it. He was talking about that today. Didn't do a ton of it in South Florida. I think he said he had about six different protections that he had to learn and work on there. He's got 10 already here in Indianapolis. So, you know, that's the big focus for him. But as much as everybody likes Mack and as much as everybody really looks forward to what his potential is, I like the idea that you can bring in a Michael. You can have another guy like Turbin who are there to say, hey, look, you know, if the rookie's not ready, here's two guys who have done it to a certain extent in the league and can take that spot if the rookie doesn't earn it.
Mm-hmm. And that's something that Jake and I spoke about last week as well, about, and specifically, you know, what does Christine Michael bring to this running back group? Specifically, not a whole lot. I mean, as far as dynamic, diverse, unique stuff.
Mm-hmm.
But what he does bring is, like you just said, and you hit it right on the nail, is this all allows Marlon Mack to grow before, you know, to ultimately crawl before he walks. So we have, you know, do you think there's a possibility that we may see, and this is just an arbitrary number, but like maybe like something like 15 carries out of Mack in the first three games? And I don't mean, is that what you expect? I mean, is that something that you see possible, like that they're going to bring him along that slowly initially?
Yeah, I think it's really possible. A lot, again, depends on how quickly that pass protection comes along, because you just can't have him out there if you can't get that part of the game done.
Mm-hmm.
Like, everybody's aware of that.
Right.
You know, and so he'll get a bigger role, I think, as he earns it. And I think that to me is the biggest thing. They can go forward and they can say, look, you know, Frank Gore's the starter, and you know Robert Turbin and the role that he played last year, he was extremely efficient. You know, he came in and he got a first down or he got a touchdown in almost every situation that he was in. So I don't see that changing. You know, he's earned that role. So I think Mack needs to find a way in between them. And it could mean, you know, a slow kind of process. I think you may see a lot of him in the preseason just because, you know, they want to see what they've got. And I think they need him to be good, because, you know, this offense has a lot going for it. We talked about that before. Obviously, assuming Luck is back and at his normal form. But assuming that's taken care of, the offensive line's a year older. They've had a year more together. They should be a little more consistent than they were a year ago. The receivers, we just got done talking about how much variety there is with them. You know what Frank Gore is going to give you. You know what he does and what he's done throughout his career. You know what Robert Turbin's going to give you. It's Mack that really can bring a dimension that they haven't had before. And they need that. You know, I think that's one of the tipping points for this season in my mind is, you know, can Mack become a consistent home run hitter that defending defensive coordinators need to stay up late at night worrying about during their game plan? Because the more they can put on that guy's plate, the defensive coordinator, I mean, the more opportunities are going to be for Andrew Luck to make plays. And, you know, the more that happens, the better this offense is going to be.
Absolutely. So do you think that this puts Ferguson on notice, Josh Ferguson?
I think he's one of the guys that, you know, really is going to have to come out and prove himself because, yeah, you know, I think he was brought in to kind of be that guy last year. It obviously never came to fruition. And it'll be interesting to see. Obviously, they saw something in him, this new staff, that they want to give him another further look because he didn't cost anything. You know, wouldn't be much to move on. And they moved on from Radcliffe instead. So, you know, I don't think that he's got one foot out the door or anything like that. But I think he's definitely a guy who's going to have to show, you know, what unique skill he can bring, why they need to put him on the roster. Not to steal a cliche from Chuck, but why is he necessary? You know, he's going to have to make himself necessary.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, there's other guys that can, you know, are return specialists. And, you know, one of the guys you talked about, last year or a couple weeks ago, we were talking about he's a wide receiver, and for some reason his name's
JoJo Natson.
Yes, yes. So they've got other options back there for return game and stuff like that. They're bringing other running backs in, and I agree with you. And that's a that's something that you hear in high school. That's not just a Pagano-ism, you know. I mean, that's a real thing. You've got to be necessary, and you've got to prove that you can do either a more than one thing, or you've got to be the very best at the one thing you can do. And right now, Ferguson is far from the best at anything that he can do on this roster.
Yeah, and I think, you know, I think he's one of those guys that he's going to have a lot to prove. But I think the running back position's very similar to the wide receiver spot in terms of going to be a lot of fun to watch in the preseason, because there are a lot of guys there, and we have no clue how many they're going to keep. You know, is it going to be three? Is it going to be four? Some of that probably depends on who the return guy is. Mm-hmm. You know, would they go with five? I highly doubt it.
Right.
But it's such a flexible thing. I think it's going to be a lot of fun to watch those guys. And they very well may cut a running back this year that ends up, you know, on somebody's roster and active on game days for somebody. And that's coming a long way at that position.
Yeah, I agree. And not only that, but I think that similar to that with the wide receiver core as well, I think that's a mm-hmm. possibility. We didn't hear much about Muhort today other than he didn't practice. Do you know anything? Any updates on him?
Yeah, from what we understand, he's kind of one day on, one day off right now. That's what they're doing with him, just to kind of bring him along. He's still, I guess, a little bit rehabbing from the knee situation. When he's been out there, he's been full go, but he's only been out there for one of the three practices that we've seen. So, like I said, my understanding is it's a one day on, one day off kind of situation. I think it's one thing that we've seen consistently with this coaching staff is that they're going to err on the side of caution. You know, if somebody's dinged up, if somebody's nicked up, especially this time of year, they're going to err towards keeping them out a little bit longer as opposed to kind of, you know, throwing too much on their plate too early. So I think that's all that's going on with Jack Muhort. I think he's a guy that, and it may continue into training camp, you know, but there hasn't been any indication yet that this is something that threatens the start of the season for him.
Yeah, it kind of struck me as odd that he not so much that he didn't practice, but so that they didn't really talk about it. So that either makes you feel like they don't want to talk about it, or it's just something that's at this point so early, you know, so long before training camp right now, that it's somewhat insignificant. So I would probably err towards that as well. That makes sense that they're not necessarily not trying to hide it or trying to put it on the back burner so people don't talk about it. Rather, it's just something that isn't necessary to worry about, because they are, you know, you said that they are putting him all full go when they do go, but full go in OTAs isn't necessarily full go. So it's just trying to get him up to speed and stuff like that. So that's good. But that also allows this offensive line to jockey around a bit. And yep. I think that, you know, and we've talked about the way that they are moving offensive linemen around and stuff anyways, but this gives them just the freedom to do it pretty much at will, whether Muhort's there in practice or not. And that can't be anything but good for this group.
What was interesting today is that Jeremy Vunovich was the one filling in for him. He was playing the left guard spot. And I don't remember seeing him play at guard before today. Now, Denzel Good we didn't see today. And nobody asked about, you know, why that was. So I don't think he was out there. He certainly wasn't working, you know, with the offensive line. So he normally would have been that guy. But they had Vunovich at left guard with the ones, and then Joe Wright at right guard, or Joe Haig at right guard. If Joe Wright was there, it really would have been a story.
That would have been nuts. That would have been headlines all over the place.
That definitely would have been something. But, yeah, you know, it's interesting with Vunovich, because we talk about that, the need to be versatile on the offensive line, because the guys, they're probably going to have maybe eight guys active on game day, sometimes seven, you know, out of your actual 45 guys that are up active on Sunday. And you need those backup guys to be extremely versatile. So, you know, maybe taking a look at Vunovich at guard is another sign. He's a guy that he was up, I think, for the game in London when everybody was hurt last year.
Uh-huh.
but he's a guy that Pagano has mentioned off and on. You know, I think he's a guy that Pagano likes, and it'll be interesting to see. And maybe, and granted, Good wasn't out there today. Brian Schwenke didn't work today. So there were guys that were not there that certainly helped move him into that spot. But it's one of those things where sometimes a little door opens a crack, and then maybe they like what they see, and it gives you another, you know, another reason to stay on the roster.
Yeah, and like you said, after OTAs is all finished and we're all done with, you know, really seeing anything until training camp, the only news that comes out is bad, and usually those are guys who they feel aren't going to create much competition, at least in theoretically, with Ballard's mantra going forward. So that would be, you know, something that we look forward to with some of the guys that we've talked about tonight. Have you seen Mathis working much with the pass rushers? I know that's been something that's been talked about. A lot of people are writing about it. But is that something, I mean, I know that he's there, and I know that he's trying to help kind of be a voice in somebody for the new pass rushers to see. Has that something that's you know, making its way into the veins of these pass rushers?
Yeah, you know, Basham talked about it during rookie minicamp and about what a big impact it is, because very seldom do you walk into a building and the franchise leader at your position is there, and not just there, he's your coach. He's telling you how to get to where he was. It is interesting. I think at one point Ted Monachino mentioned that, you know, Mathis is doing a really good job in terms of imparting things to guys, and just his enthusiasm, it kind of wears off. I think you're around him long enough, you want to go rush the quarterback. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. It's just, he's always been that kind of guy. But it, the guys they have right now, by and large, are different body types than Robert Mathis. And so it's kind of interesting in that regard, that there are some things that he could do that physically some of these guys just don't bend that way. They just can't do that. But I think it's good for them to learn from him and to get a chance to, you know, as much as anything, to ask him questions.
Right.
To find out, you know, how to get past something that they might be dealing with, or how to deal with that themselves. And I think there's nothing but good that comes with it. The interesting thing is going to be how long, you know, does he stay with it? He's kind of a volunteer assistant guy right now, so I don't think there's any kind of set timeline as of yet as to, you know, how long he's going to be around. But so far, I think especially the younger guys, they get nothing but good things from him being there and being in their ear.
Now, the other day you wrote an article for the Herald Bulletin on Henry Anderson, how he's starting to feel like his old self again. Go in a little bit of a detail about that, about kind of how, or what he expressed to you as far as how he's feeling coming forward, because I actually wrote a piece today for Colts Wire that basically just says how imperative he is to the growth of this offensive line. There's a few guys now that other opposing offenses are going to have to scheme around, so that's good for Henry, even if he is 100%. But what is it about the way he feels right now that makes him say that he's feeling, you know, I'm ready to go?
Yeah, I think first and foremost that he's out there on the field. I mean, this time last year, he was not with the team. He was in the training room, you know, but he was not out there getting reps out on the field. And what's funny is, for as much as fluid as some spots on the defense have been, the last 2 weeks, there's been five guys that have been pretty well out there most of the time. And it's, you know, the defensive line has looked like Anderson, Al Woods, and John Hankins, and then you've had Simon and Sheard at the two outside spots, and that's been a real consistent set so far. You know, again, mm-hmm. Kendall Langford's not working yet.
Right.
There's a lot that still needs to be worked into that. David Perry wasn't here last week. He was here this week, but, you know, he had some other obligations I think everybody's well aware of last week.
Right.
And so there's, you know, there's reasons why sometimes it's that way, but it's interesting to see, because while those linebackers are moving in and out on the inside, and while the corners and safeties kind of rotate in and out, Vontae Davis hasn't been around. So that's, you know, opened up even more of that rotation. Those five guys don't seem to rotate much with the ones. And so it's one of those things you kind of take note of. But for Henry, I think that's the biggest part of it. He's out there. He's feeling right. You know, last year he would come in and he would tell you, I don't know how it's going to be. You know, early during training camp, he talked about, I don't know when I'm going to trust the knee. You know, I don't know when I'm going to feel like myself. And this year already, you know, in May and in June, he already trusts the knee. Hmm. And he already feels like he's right physically. And I think that's such an important part of this because, you know, he's so open and honest about that kind of thing. Mm-hmm. And you know, what happened last year with him is not unexpected, as you're well aware. I mean, that's a year removed from an ACL, that's kind of what you deal with sometimes. And so far, very early, there's starting to be signs that, you know, that's behind him and hopefully he can stay healthy. But he feels like he could cut. You know, he can do everything he needs to do on the field. And I don't think that was ever the case at any point last season.
Yeah, and Pagano touched on that today as well, talking about how he's got to have that confidence in the leg and in the knee and everything going forward. And once he gets that, he's good to go. And, you know, but confidence in the knee is something, even on minor knee issues, people have to have a new confidence. And I'll say this, definitely not as a professional athlete, but myself, when I was playing basketball, you know, after I had a couple knee surgeries just for meniscus tears and stuff like that, whether it was on the football field, basketball, just whatever, I had to, you know, get out of my own head a little bit and not think about it. And I can only imagine what an ACL tear would do to somebody when you're going up against the best of the best every Sunday and every day in practice.
And I think that's, you know, the next step for Henry is going to be when they put the pads on and then the preseason games. And then we'll see, you know, how much he's come through. But he definitely, when you hear him talking about no physical limitations and you hear him talking about his body feels right, that's the best thing Colts fans can hear right now, because if he can get back to the form he was in the first 9 weeks of his rookie season, that's a big change to this defensive front.
Mm-hmm. And I actually think that a lot of what Jonathan Hankins said about, you know, a lot of his talk and some of his more bolstering comments and stuff like that about that they're going to surprise some people. I think that a lot of people are starting to feed into that, fan base, players, coaches. I mean, I think everybody's starting to feed into a little bit about what Jonathan Hankins is talking about. And that's just as important as anything. And like you said, a lot of people are talking about him, you know, inside the building there. And I think that it's because they're starting to believe what he's saying as a first-year guy coming in and being that boisterous. I think that a lot of people, especially the players, are feeding into that. And that can't be anything but good for the Colts, for sure, going forward.
And what's really fun about this is the defense has this energy and it has this excitement, and the number one pick hasn't even been on the field yet. Yeah. You know, there's still a few weeks away from that. So when they get Malik Hooker into the mix too, I think the excitement's just going to go up even a little bit more for that unit. So it's fun to watch right now, though, because a lot of guys who don't necessarily get a whole lot of reps otherwise are, because guys are out and they're, you know, rotating around. We saw a lot of Matthias Farley today at safety. It was, for the most part, with first team, it was him and Butler, and that's a different look. And it's, you know, it's a chance for Farley to kind of try to make a name for himself. And I think right now he's probably most famous for being the nickelback last year. I think it was in Denver when they literally ran out of corners and had to just find somebody to finish the game with.
Yeah, he did maybe against Denver, Pittsburgh maybe as well.
Yeah, so, you know, I mean, there's a guy who, like we were talking about before, there's a lot of guys on this roster where there's competition all around them, and they've got to kind of step forward and make a name for themselves, and he kind of got some reps to do that today, and I'm sure he will throughout the preseason. So it's really kind of fun to watch that right now with the defense. I think they all understand they're, you know, one or two guys away from maybe being a starter, and they know that the opportunity is there. Tevin Missel's another guy who was out there with the ones a little bit today. And I think he's a guy everybody's really intrigued by because he's been here just his third year, I think, now with the team. He had the injury in Washington. They claimed him anyway. They've kept him around, even though he's been banged up. He's another guy who looks like, cross your fingers, knock on wood, he might finally be healthy. and able to compete. And who knows, you know, where he fits into the mix. But it was fun to kind of see him. We all kind of looked up for a second, like, wait, who's 27? That's a different number. We're not used to that. And, you know, Tevin Mitchell, there's just so many guys like that on this roster. Guys with all the world to prove and with that giant opportunity in front of them. And I think that's, it's going to be really fun to watch as the preseason starts and move forward.
Yeah. And I think that the cool thing about it is I really think that some of those guys that you're talking about believe that this competition mantra, so to speak, isn't just a mantra. It's a real deal. If you're the best player, or you're a person that can compete yourself into the lineup, you're going to play. And I think that goes, I mean, that goes a long way. Some of these guys come into camp and stuff, and they know that they're the fourth or fifth guy, sixth guy on depth chart, when, you know, basically the only two safeties at either position are going to play, or four corners are going to play a large majority of the snaps, and the rest of the guys are going to be relegated to special teams. This is a group I feel now that there's a bit of a resurgence in confidence, and they believe that if they fight and that they can earn themselves a roster spot, that it's going to be rewarded to them.
Absolutely. And I think, you know, you hate to jump too far ahead and then it changes on you, but I really think that's going to keep these preseason games more interesting later into the game. Mm-hmm. Because there's going to be a lot of guys out there for a long time.
Right.
That have possibilities, you know, that are competing for spots on this roster.
And it's interesting, too, that they're not going to be cutting down to a 75 this year. That's going to go straight from a 90 to a 53.
Thank goodness they finally did that. Yeah. I always thought that was one of the dumbest things, because you end up making a cut on Tuesday and then playing a game on Thursday where you really need the guys you just cut on Tuesday,
right,
and then making another cut on Saturday. It was such a meaningless cut.
Yeah. I agree. It really doesn't do anything. I mean, why not, when you have that many people in there and you have all these guys in the NFL? I mean, think about how many guys are let go. Almost half of the roster is let go between the first preseason game and the fourth preseason game. That's virtually 32 more teams of NFL players, you know, are on the waiver wire. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's an insane amount of football players. Why not give them all four games to try to prove themselves? You know what I mean? I mean,
yeah,
if they don't, that's fine. But you're at least giving them all four times. I mean, now you're forced teams to cut to 75 when they really shouldn't. Like you said, that's such a meaningless cut.
And it was so bad. And now you have that chance to really rest guys in that week four and look at the guys you really want to look at. You know, I think some of the argument at the time was, well, those guys – get out a little early and they get a look. No one was signing somebody on the Wednesday before the final preseason game. That wasn't, you know, that
right.
wasn't common practice. That's not going to happen.
Yeah.
I don't think it's going to change much for guys' opportunities to make the teams after they get cut.
No, if anything, it's a trade that happens, and that's never a guy who's fifth or sixth on the depth chart getting traded typically.
Yeah. So, you know, I just, I look at it, and I think that's one of the best moves they've made. And it is. It's going to keep things interesting because, you know, I don't know. There's some starting spots that are definitely up for grabs, but there's a lot of depth spots that are up for grabs. And let's face it, the special teams last year, Pat McAfee covered for a lot of sins.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there were a lot of things going on in the special teams phase that you don't want to see happen.
Right.
And again, tons of opportunity for these guys to go out and make plays in that phase and make this roster because of it. People forget that's how Robert Mathis started with the Colts. You know, he was a special teams demon as a rookie. And it's a good opportunity. And it's a spot, you know, it's a chance for a lot of these younger guys to make this team. And I think the special team spots are wide open. They may be the only thing that can compete with inside linebacker.
They may have a bunch of crazies on the Colts special teams this year, just looking like a prison football team going out to kill the guards, you know, trying to make this roster.
Uh-huh.
That would be fun to watch for sure. I'm curious, just, you know, last year, now I haven't been to OTAs or anything like that, but as far as training camp the past few years, you would see Gregson patrolling the sidelines and stuff like that. Are you guys seeing Ballard quite a bit during OTAs?
Yep, and his whole staff. You really see him out there a lot. You see Rex Hogan out there a lot. You see Ed Dodds out there a lot. During rookie minicamp, Morocco Brown was out there quite a bit. Yeah, they're present, and they're definitely a part of this process. I think everybody understands it's a fresh start, you know, and you can kind of feel that with the players almost every time they're up there. It's a fresh start. It's a new situation, and everybody has a chance now to catch somebody's eye and to, you know, change their role on this team or make a role for themselves on this team. That's the best. I think that's the best situation you can ask for in the offseason, because it really does. You talked about it just a couple minutes ago. It really does change the way a guy prepares. It changes the way he approaches practice every day. It just creates that energy that you can feel with the team. And it's not just the players. It's some of the coaching changes. You know, every wide receiver at one point or another who we've talked to has brought up Sanjay Lau. They love what he's doing and the detail-oriented approach that he's taken. Early on, I didn't see it so much today, but early on when the special teams practice would happen in the, you know, early part of practice, Lau would take T.Y. Hilton into the inside facility, into the indoors spot there, and they would just work on footwork and just work on some detail-oriented things. And it's just something that he's been doing with each of the receivers, and almost every one of them has brought it up, how much it's meant to them, how important it is to them. It's an interesting part of you know, the total package here is that, hey, you know, we'll see. That's a position group we want to watch anyway, and there's a coach there that evidently is making a tangible difference.
That's good. That's, you know, really interesting. I was kind of wondering if that would be one of those moves that happened with the coaching staff that was just kind of a, you know, is it the assistant tight ends coach, the guy who just comes out and tries to help guys get in line or just whatever, you know what I mean? It makes you wonder how much of an impact any of those can do. But there was a lot of talk about the guy in the offseason to begin with. So, I mean, that's the fun part about this is when position coaches like that get the notoriety and then you see that there's a reason for it. And yep. the feedback that the players at that position are coming back with is the reason for it and is part of it. Now, on the other hand, do you remember last year, there was, at least in my opinion, and I think we've talked about this before as well, there was a different, now I wouldn't necessarily say tone in his voice, but there was a different feeling around Pagano, almost a, man, I don't know. To me, it felt like there was, he was less, and I don't want to say like less courteous to the media or anything like that, but it was less of a worry. He didn't care about the media. That's just the way it felt to me. Is there a new version of Pagano this year, or has he kind of stayed with the change that he made over last year? Because last year there was a bunch of thickness in the air. I mean, you could cut it with a knife almost last year with in Grigson's final season. But even with this year, it seems like there would be a little bit of tension, only because I think Pagano legitimately feels like he's coaching for his job. But at the same time, there's a different, it's not a, you know, he didn't get another Grigson type individual in there to fill that role. This is a totally different guy. It seems like that they want everybody involved, and there has to be a comfort level almost with Pagano, at least to feel like I've got my chance to do it, and I've got a really good opportunity with some good folks, and Ballard's bringing in some smart guys to the personnel department, and all these things inclined. I mean, he did lose Jimmy Ray, one of his, you know, staunch supporters, but is there anything new that you guys are feeling with Pagano at the pressers or just on an individual basis?
He's been, I think, more laid back so far. You know, I think he's been more conversational. You can probably notice that just in the videos. Mm-hmm. He's more apt to joke or you know, even poke a little fun at himself from time to time during this preseason. But we don't know yet. We wonder if that's a spring thing, and that'll change once the presser of the season comes around. But yeah, I think there's been a much looser atmosphere, but that kind of goes for the whole, it's kind of part, it's a piece of the whole. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think really the whole roster, the whole building has been looser. You know, there's been more of a feel of guys are having fun, you know, right. And I think it'll be interesting to see if that translates into anything tangible during the year, but there's a definite change in atmosphere. And that's without, you know, our biggest gripe is we haven't been in the locker room yet. You know, they haven't, they have not opened the locker room yet. So that's without even being in there, you get that vibe. And it'll be more interesting to see what the locker room is like, right now too. But I know that the vibe that you get from guys, everybody that's come up, Chuck, you know, kind of leading that charge, but almost every player that's come up has seemed to be a little more loose, a little more carefree than they may have been last year. But like you said, a lot of that comes to the situation. Yeah, there's a lot of evaluation going on, coaching staff included. Everybody is coaching or playing for their jobs to a certain extent, but you don't get to that level if you don't believe you can win in those situations. And I think now they feel like, you know, that's going to be rewarded. Their best efforts are going to be rewarded. You kind of feel that throughout the building.
And almost a collective breath of fresh air for the entire group, it seems.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, it's really been everywhere. And I think that's part of the energy that we keep talking about. It's just, there's a positive vibe. Now, granted, they start 0-2, maybe it's all gone. You know, it may not last for long.
Right.
But right now, there's definitely a positive vibe. There's an upbeat kind of feeling. Even some of the drills that they do, they started doing a drill with the quarterbacks where they have a net that almost looks like the kicking net, and it's got three pockets in it at a diagonal, almost like a number three die. Mm-hmm. And they throw at it almost like you would at Dave and Buster's. And, you know, the competition during that, they'll usually put some pads down, and the quarterbacks will have to run either to their right or to their left. And when they come out of the pads, they throw to one of the three pockets. And it's just, there's even that drill, there's a friendly kind of competition and an energy about it where you can just kind of see guys going, okay, you know, you made yours, I'm going to make mine. And then you have Luck back there kind of, you just wonder when he's going to grab a football and you know, kind of go rogue and join it himself. But he's watching every step and he's giving them pointers and you just see it. Like even in little drills like that. Today, there was a pretty nondescript play in general, but at the end of it, Quincy Wilson kind of he got in the right stance and it was a little bit, you know, I think they always talk about thudding. There was a little bit of contact. It wasn't a tackle or an attempted tackle, but there was a little bit of physicality at the end of the play. And as soon as it happened, the defense kind of started hooting and hollering and, you know, they came over to give him high fives and it's just that kind of thing happens a little more often than you saw in the past.
That's good. I mean, that's always the fun part about it, you know, because it, you know, undoubtedly once training camp comes around, that'll be there as well, but it'll be a little more serious. It'll be a little less fun and games. It'll be a little more serious as per usual, because guys will be fighting pretty hard for those jobs. George, thanks again for joining me tonight, man. We could literally do this for hours. Always a lot of fantastic nuggets of information and just great to have you on here to just get your point of view on everything. It's always a lot of fun, man. I appreciate you stopping through.
Yeah, I enjoy it every time.
Absolutely. Anything you working on in particular coming up in the next couple days or anything?
You know, just the stuff that I did today that should already be out there. A little story on Walker, who kind of basically finished up his last class, hopped in his car, and drove to Indianapolis. So that's kind of how excited he was to get rolling here. And, you know, and he said pretty famously today that he eventually wants to take Chris Ballard's job. So
yeah, I saw
that'll be fun. He wants to be a GM. You don't hear that often from players. So that was fun. And then my notebook just leads with Hankins. And, you know, his kind of, he's been boasting, but he says he can back it up. So I think that's going to be a big key with him. And, you know, the story, the non-story, nobody knows right now what's going on with Andrew Luck. Still hasn't thrown. I, you know, my take on that is there's going to be questions until he throws, and there's going to be rightfully concern until the questions are answered.
Right.
And there's no way to downplay that. So I don't want to make it sound like it's not important at all. That being said, you know, my understanding, I know there's no timetable publicly from the team, but my understanding, there was a former team doctor, I think, on Twitter from the get-go when the surgery happened or first was revealed, you know, in January. My understanding was always that you wouldn't see him throwing until July. So
right.
I never really expected to see it out there now. And I don't know what will happen when training camp starts. We talked about that before, last week even, you know. It could bleed all the way into the regular season. We don't know. But I still feel like as long as the only addition to that quarterback group is Phillip Walker, and take nothing away from him, the coaches really love what he's done. He's out there competing. But in a time where Josh McCown was available, Ryan Fitzpatrick was available, Brian Hoyer was available, Colin Kaepernick and RG3 are still available, as long as the only addition remains Phillip Walker, I'm not that concerned about Andrew Luck. That's kind of my take there.
Yeah, and I agree. And it makes total sense, too. Like you said, we did talk about that last week, but you couldn't say it any better than that. If they felt there was legitimate concern for anything more long-term than just natural healing and that coming back into health, then they would have done something a lot more significant at the quarterback position in order to minimize that, the burden of losing Luck, possibly for, you know, what, few weeks, several weeks, whatever they, you know, would have thought that it would be. So that makes total sense. Make sure you guys are following George on Twitter at GM Bremer. And George, once again, I appreciate you stopping by, man. Always great to talk to you.
No problem. Anytime, man.
Absolutely. Thank you guys all for listening. Another great show with our friend George Bremer. Always good stuff. Make sure you guys are getting over to Apple Podcasts and giving us a rating and review. Those things are doing really well. Can't stress that enough. They're doing it, really is making a big difference. And make sure you guys are using the call-in line as well. I mean, I've got one sitting on the back burner right now that I haven't gotten to. We didn't put it on this show. I will put it on the next show, though. You guys can get them on with whoever's on the guest list that day. We'll get that up. It's 574-516-2881. Get those in, and we'll play them on the show and answer them as we go. So thank you guys all for listening, and I'll talk to you on Friday right here on Locked On Colts.
You are Locked On Colts, your daily podcast on the Indianapolis Colts, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.